Welcome to Home and Family Finance with Paul Barry. It's your family, it's your finances, and it's your future. Home and Family Finance is sponsored by the Defense Credit Union Council, serving those who serve our country, and by CUNA, the Credit Union National Association. Now, here's the host of Home and Family Finance, Paul Barry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us here on Home and Family Finance, or as we remind you every show, we ask the question, and the one that really what the show is all about, are you financially fit? What does that mean, you ask? Well, I tell you, are you making more than you spend, or are you spending more than you make? If it's the latter, you are not financially fit. Do you have 6 months of savings to meet all expected or unexpected expenses? And the unexpected expenses mean it's you also have an emergency fund. The survival fund is 6 months of savings to meet all of those expected monthly expenses. You know what they are, and you've got that set aside so that if something happens to the job, something happens to you, you can reach over here for the next 6 months and know that you can meet your expenses. Are you prepared to do that? And then there's also, I like to have what I call the slush or emergency fund. A little bit more sitting aside for the things that you don't expect. It's so very important, okay? And are you saving? Saving at least 5% of your income on a monthly basis. Whatever you're making, put away 5%. Put away 5%. Not going to hurt, and you will be so happy. And at the end of the year, you're going to say, you know, Paul, you're absolutely right. I've got a little savings pot here as well. This is aside from the emergency fund and also the survival fund. You got it? Okay. Now, the topic today, and it's very important because this falls right into that. Something always happens. And in the case of your lifestyle and your marriage, if you are, how are you and the spouse doing? You know, there's a new book out, and it's a book by Stan Corey, author of the book, and I'll tell you more about him. It's called The Divorce Dance. It got me to thinking, well, wait a minute. Why would he write the book? What's driving that? Well, let me tell you what's driving that. And when you hear this, you're going to be as surprised, I think, as I am, and I was surprised. Listen to this. How many people get divorced each year, do you think? Okay, in America, there is one divorce approximately every 36 seconds. That's nearly 2,400 divorces per day, 16,800 divorces per week, and 870,000 divorces a year. The average length of a marriage that ends in divorce is 8 years. People wait an average of 3 years after a divorce to remarry, if they remarry at all. And if they do remarry, get this, folks, get this, 67% of the second marriage ends in divorce, 73% of the third marriage ends in divorce. Wow. Well, I don't have to ask Stan why he wrote the book. I mean, with those kind of numbers, you can do the math. Stan is a certified financial planner. He's a chartered financial consultant and certified private wealth advisor. His career in financial services span over 35 years. He is a sought-after expert who regularly provides financial commentary at national conferences and print and online publications and on TV. He's appeared in USA Today, Working Woman Magazine, Money, Good Housekeeping, and you get the idea. He is well respected for what he does. His new book is The Divorce Dance, Protect Your Money, Marriage, Your Emotions, and Understand the Legal Issues. Stan, welcome to Home and Family Finance. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
This is something else. The dreaded D word strikes. It's time to take action. But unfortunately, the divorce landscape is full of landmines and pitfalls, isn't it?
It is. And I think that most of the time, because people don't normally get divorced on a yearly basis, it is a surprise every time. So it's one of those areas that you go into the unknown. And doing so, many people are led astray because they just don't know what to expect and how to deal with the emotional impacts. And decision-making in a high-stress environment is always difficult.
And I understand it. I'm going to admit here, and I haven't done this in my 9 years. I'm a divorcee twice. I've been divorced twice in my life. I have now been married for the last 30 years to a wonderful person with my three children. But I understand the emotions that are involved, and I also understand how helpless I felt when I was confronted with the fact that we were going to break up. I really didn't know where to turn first. I mean, I guess that's everybody's experience, is it?
Yes, I think that what happens is that if there's a surprise divorce where somebody comes in and announces they want a divorce, the other person's not really expecting it, versus a couple that have been having the conversation for some period of time or been having marital difficulties, seeking marriage counseling and other things, that may not be so much of a surprise, but it's still the moment of that final decision to say we're going to get a divorce is terrific. I mean, horrific.
Yeah, it is horrific.
It's difficult because, again, the emotional issues and all of the ancillary items. And the main issue, I guess I will let you know, that I'm concerned about in divorce is that too many times it becomes a battle. And especially when you have children, they become the ancillary damage. Yeah. And so my goal is to help people look at how to have a respectful divorce, especially with involving children. Because the reality is you have children, you're going to know each other the rest of your life. You know, and especially if they're younger, if you've got graduations and not just holidays and birthdays, but you've got graduations, potential weddings, and maybe be blessed with grandchildren and all these other things going on as life events occur. And so your lives are forever going to interact. So by having a respectful divorce, you'll be able to have a much better long-term relationship within the family.
Okay. Well, when we come back, I'm going to ask you to explain how we can have that respectful divorce. And let's face it, right now, if the figures are right, half of the people that are listening to this program are either in on a divorce or contemplating it. That's stunning. We'll be right back with Stan Corey. His book is called Divorce, The Divorce Dance. You'll want to know more. We'll be right back.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And coming up on the program, we're going to be talking about your second largest investment. That is buying an automobile. We've got an expert on how to keep that car on the road and what you should know about this new technology. David Mobaum will be with us. But right now we're talking with Stan Corey, an author of the new book, The Divorce Dance. It is how to protect your money, manage your emotions, and understand the legal issues involved, and how to have, I guess, a civilized or respectful. Can it be respectful?
Absolutely. One of the things that people think about in divorce is they immediately think of what they've seen on TV or where you have litigation going on or court cases in it. And the reality is less than 5% of cases ever end up in court. And truly, it's not the place you want to go, because what you're allowing a judge then to stand in and make the decisions for you. And when this is going to impact the rest of your life, it doesn't make a lot of sense to give someone a few hours of their time to look at your whole life and make those decisions. So there are so many other better ways to accomplish the divorce in a more beneficial manner for both parties. And this includes mediation, which the book discusses. It also collaborative divorce, as well as just what's called more of a traditional, where the attorneys will negotiate with you. But ultimately, it will be your decision to agree to the division. So what happens is that it's the person that is less well-informed financially is usually at more of a loss and has more difficulty with the process and the decision making. So it's very imperative. Also, the second thing I talk about is really creating your own team, regardless of what process you choose. Mm-hmm. And that team should be having a mental health provider because dealing with the emotional issues, as well as having a good financial person that can help you understand the financial consequences of the decisions you'll make in the divorce process.
Should I leave that to the – I guess you're saying I should have an attorney helping me. And should I leave that to him to put together my team, or do – I'm not sure I know how to do that myself. I'm emotional. I'm upset. I don't know how to put together a team. How do I get to that step, Stan?
Well, the book does address those issues in particular because it is difficult. But basically, yes, an attorney is going to be necessary to draft the final document and so forth that you'll need for the property settlement agreement. However, the team is basically working together with people that are on your side, they're your advocate. If you're dealing with a traditional process or where you're potentially, negotiating between attorneys or litigation issues. But if you go through mediation, usually you'll have one mediator that will work with both parties to bring understanding of the issues and help you reach agreements that way. And they can actually draft a memorandum of understanding, which then is used by the attorneys to draft the actual divorce decree. But it's a working together relationship and getting the guidance mm-hmm. from each of these parties. But it does take effort to take the time to research whom should be on your team. And generally, attorneys and others can give you referrals.
Ideas. Okay. My guess
is there's online access to all of these things. If you look up mediation in your state, or same as looking up collaborative divorce process.
My guess is Stan Corey. His book is called The Divorce Dance: Protecting Your Money, Managing Your Emotions, and Understanding the Legal Issues. Does this have to be an expensive proposition to break up?
Absolutely not. Unfortunately, litigation is obviously the most expensive, and that's why you really don't want to go there as well. But typically, it comes down to what are the disagreements, and can you come to a compromise? Can you find common ground? Can you come to a resolution together that allows both to continue on with their lives in a safe environment and in financially sound? You're not going to be able to live as well as you did before when you two people, as we know, living differently or apart is more expensive than two people living together. So it takes time. And the reality is the person that has the higher income is going to recover faster than the person that doesn't. It's never going to be an equal basis. And I always say in Virginia, there's a term that Virginia is an equitable state, which a lot of states are. But equitable does not mean equal. So the division of property and income and support, all those things need to be determined. But the end result is understanding the consequence to you long term. And that's what's missing in 98% of the time.
Is understanding.
People agree to something without understanding what it really
understanding what's involved. My guest is Stan Curry. We'll come back with more. His book, folks, it's available to you, The Divorce Dance. I'm not advocating that you divorce. I'm not advocating that you even head in that direction. But over 50% of the divorces will end, of marriages will end in divorce. Somebody's got to walk in there and tell you what you need to know. We'll be right back with more with Stan. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. Listening to Home and Family Finance on Radio America. I'm your host, Paul Berry, and we thank you for joining us. Our program sponsors the Defense Credit Union Council and the Credit Union National Association, and we thank them for their continued support of the program dedicated to making all of us financially fit. Are you? And I've defined that to you so you know. If there's something you want us to talk about, give us a note. You can send us an email at www.paulberry.com or hffradio.com. We'd like to hear from you. The Defense Credit Union Council and its member credit unions believe that financial readiness equals mission readiness and supports the efforts of Military Saves in their dedication to improving the financial well-being of our troops wherever they may be serving. Military Saves is a year-round campaign that seeks to motivate, to support, and to encourage military families to save money, to reduce debt, and to build wealth. Great things that you need to do. As part of the Department of Defense's financial readiness campaign, Military Saves acts as a resource center for information on financial education and counseling. Check out its links to useful websites for military families where they can learn better money management and can find partners who can help military members achieve their financial goals. Military Saves. Set a goal, make a plan, save automatically. Go to militarysaves.org for more information and take the Savers Pledge today. And as we always say, you don't have to be in the military to save. It's just a smart thing. How much? Save at least 5% of what you make on a monthly basis, and you will thank me at the end of the year. You will say, that was a very smart thing that you told me to do, and I've done it, and I feel better about everything. My guest is a young man who has written a book on divorce, folks, and why do we need it? Because half of you married today won't be in just, who knows, before 7 years. That's according to statistics right now. Can you believe that? Over 800,000 divorces will take place. Stan's book is called The Divorce Dance, and it is about what you need to know in order to have a respectful separation, even more so, Stan. What's the most important thing that you want folks to know through your book?
Well, first off, I appreciate being called a young man. I haven't heard that one in a while.
All right, sir.
But,
all right.
Truly, the real issue comes down to what is it going to mean to you down the road? When I used to speak with women's groups, I said, your marriage may not have lasted forever, but your property settlement will. Yeah. And so you can't go back and revise a property settlement agreement because it is a permanent and irrevocable agreement unless there's some other issues that would be
that could come up.
Litigated.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reality is people will go through a divorce, they'll have someone help them, they'll get attorneys to help them, and the attorneys will look at them and say, can you live with this? Can you deal with this? Is this okay? And sometimes the persons are capable of saying, you know, yes, or, you know, with understanding that a lot of people, you know, are shaking their heads, they're under stress, they're under trauma, they're under their emotional things going on, that the kids, the schools, or whatever, they're happening, and they may agree to whatever is being presented. They can be worn out, they're tired of dealing with the everything, and they agree to something. And about a year or so later, when things calm down and they wake up to reality of what they've done, they realize their cash flow is difficult, they're unable to save the 5% a month,
yeah.
They're unable to do the things that are important, and they find themselves in financial difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe from having chosen assets that don't generate income over assets that will generate income.
Yeah.
There's a lot of differences there. But we're not understanding the tax consequences of things that they've retained as part of the property settlement agreement. So understanding those things, to me, is a critical aspect. When we do divorce analysis work, we work with the people so that we can analyze the consequences of the mm-hmm. decisions and take a look down the road to say, how is this going to impact your financial wellness long-term? And that's really the key that's not addressed in a normal divorce process.
Gotcha.
So that's, again, another reason that you want to have someone that was working with you to help you understand those issues.
All right, two things before we close. Number one, Stan, where is your book available and how can they reach out to you if they need to?
Well, it's available if you go to thedivorcedance.com. You'll get our website. It'll have all the information about the book, and there's some reading available there, as well as connection to Amazon to order the book through Amazon, either through on Kindle or hard copy.
Okay. All right. And the other thing is, which I just don't have time to get into, is that my partner, I hear you, I want to follow you through, but my partner's being a real whatever we want to throw in there. How do I get him or her to join me in a respectful divorce? And I think that's part of what you tell us in the book, is it?
Yes. I mean, there are difficulties in those sometimes where one person has a different agenda. And I think what reality comes back is when they realize what they're getting involved with, and the cost many times can be a deciding point, that it's less expensive to go through a respectful divorce than one that's a contested divorce.
Stan Corey, a pleasure to have you on the program. I'm sure we'll talk more about this because it's a big issue, and I really appreciate you taking time to join us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay. That's a pleasure. Coming up next, what about that car you buy? Do you keep it? Do you sell? Do you get another? It's a big investment, and we know so little about what we should, but I've got the expert. Next.
Helping you be safe, smart, and secure with your finances. Welcome back to Home and Family Finance with your host, Paul Berry.
Okay, we've taken care of the divorce issue. Well, let me say it another way. I hope that you're not about to get a divorce. I hope you'll get family counseling. I hope you'll do everything you possibly can do to keep your marriage together, not only for your sake, but the sake of the children, especially if you have children. Think about them. I know, again, I am the product of a broken home. My mom and dad separated when I was 3 years old. And that's something that I said I would never do to my children, and I didn't. And all three now are grown and doing what they have to do. And, you know, listen, it's never easy. My marriage wasn't perfect and isn't perfect, but it's you know what, I'm better with my partner. She may not be perfect, but she's perfect for me. So try to hang together if you can and get the counseling. That's always important. And then figure out how to share the car. You know how much time we spend in our cars on average? The average person spends somewhere in the order of an hour to 2 hours, 101 minutes, driving per day. That's a lot of time in your car. So what kind of car do you drive? What's the investment? How do you keep it especially now, I'm going, you know, I don't have a rear view mirror when I put my car in reverse. I don't have mirrors on the outsides that say somebody's coming up on you. And the reason I don't is I bought a good car. I bought a great car. I've got over 193,000 miles on my car. It's a Chrysler 300. I'm very pleased to say 2006 or 2007. So it didn't have all of this, the gadgets and the latest devices. And I'm thinking about that. So do I want to make my older car smarter, or do I want to get a new car? There are tons of different questions that we want to get to today. And my guest has absolutely the capability of helping us understand what we should know. He is let me tell you who he is. He's a interesting fellow. He's in studio with us. He made the leap from print to electronic journalism in 1995 after a stint at Dow Jones Newswires. It taught him about working in real time. He moved to America Online, where he became the editor of its business news content. He's also worked for MarketWatch. He joined Kiplinger in 2001, handling a variety of content, including business forecasting and taxes. He also writes about cars and car maintenance, and that's what caught our attention because he's a brilliant writer and had some ideas about these things. So we're very pleased to welcome David into the program. David Mulbaum is his name. And David, welcome to Home and Family Finance.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, I'm convinced that the second largest investment that we ever make behind a home is the investment of a car. Some of us spend up to $100,000 on our cars or more. Some of us spend a lot less. But it is an investment that we have to have, or at least we think we have to have. So my question, first and foremost, is how do I know which car I ought to be buying out there? I watch the commercials. Boy, they're doing all the people things and, you know, the real not actors, but real people. I mean, it's a big business, isn't it?
It is. It is. And as you experience with your Chrysler, cars are lasting a lot longer. The average age of a car on the road keeps climbing. Now, that's because of economic reasons. Basically, people couldn't afford a new car. But it's also because of the inherent durability of cars is improving over time.
Well, there was a belief at one point that cars were built by the big three at that point. Okay, the last maybe 3 years, and then they wanted you to buy a new car. Has that changed?
Yeah, planned obsolescence is pretty much gone. Each individual car may have its foibles, and there are certainly brands, Toyota, that have very much proven their ability to go forever. But across the board, reliability is way better than it used to be.
And it's interesting because that flies in the face now. You know, I've got a car that I've been driving for many years. I do like the car, and I've had a lot of different cars, exotics, everything. I've never had a car that I've liked as much as this one. And I never believed that I would get 193,000 miles on this car, and I drive it every day, and it's acting like it acts like it did when I first got the car. Is that unusual, or is that just the way it is today with cars?
No, you're not an outlier. I mean, 200K really is the new 100K in terms of miles. I mean, getting your car to 100,000 miles used to be a milestone. Now it's kind of like, eh.
Yeah.
You know, a car is absolutely expected to pass that milestone. But one important thing usually happens around 100,000 miles is that's when it's time, if your car has one, to replace the timing belt. Big maintenance step. And if an ignored timing belt, if you skip on that and the timing belt breaks, that's usually the end of your engine. Usually means a complete engine rebuild. So as we march on to these longer mileages, it's still important to remember maintenance.
Why don't we know that? I mean, I should know that 100,000 miles, the belt might break. And if it does, I mean, why don't we know
it's
this?
First of all, that's a rough mileage. But, you know, it's in the owner's manual. And the owner's manual is what
– Who reads the owner's manual?
But that's the thing. So the question of, like, when do you do the service for your car? What service schedule do you follow? The answer is in your owner's manual. And I think a lot of people sometimes get sidetracked when they go into the shop and they might – or the dealer and there's an entirely different oh, this is our recommended schedule,
right, right.
which has all the upsells in it. Read that owner's manual. It's
reliable and it's right.
It's your car's Bible.
Yeah. Okay. The other point, and before we take the break, do I take my car to the dealership or do I take it to Jiffy Lube and to Michelin and all these other companies that promise? And by the way, they do it for a lot less. But where am I better off?
That is a very big question, and I don't want to get in trouble.
Okay.
However, here's the thing. One thing is, first of all, you should have a relationship with your car dealer in part because – even once you're out of warranty, in part because there are often sort of hidden warranty or hidden recalls, essentially. Not the big ones that we hear about the airbags, but little fixes that the car manufacturer comes out with and – doesn't necessarily promote, but when the car is in, they will do. Mm-hmm. So it's a good idea to go into the dealer every now and again too.
Okay.
But
an
independent, they can do a good job too.
Okay. And when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about that because I learned something by going into the dealership is that they do get these, as you say, notices from the company about what's going on with my car nationwide or worldwide that I won't know because it's not a recall, but it's something that should be taken care of. My guest is David Bobaum. He is a car expert. He's here to tell you how to keep your car on the road and get as much out of it as you can, how to protect your investment, quite frankly. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
We want you to be part of the show. Email us with your financial questions. Ask about the Defense Credit Union Council. Tell us what topics you want to hear about. Or just let us know what's on your mind. We'll give you the address in a few minutes. But now, more of Home and Family Finance with Paul Berry.
And my guest is David Bobaum. He is an auto expert with Kiplinger. You can find him by going to Kiplinger.com. I look him up, and much of what he – and there are several items that he has on file there if you go on the net, and you can learn some things about the car. And I don't want to get too far away from this business about whether I should try to – you know, I don't – as I said, I don't have a rearview mirror, a camera. Yeah, rearview camera, and I don't, I don't have that rearview camera, and I don't have those little thingies outside that go flash.
Blind spot information.
Yeah. And I don't have, my car doesn't drive by itself. I mean, I have to sit there and pay attention. So my question is, what should I do here, David?
Right.
Do I?
Well, the distinction really comes down to the most advanced and the fanciest and the most technologically amazing of the new car technologies are really only available on a new car. So if you want the blind spot information system, if you want a car that brakes automatically if you get too close to
right.
a pedestrian or a car in mm-hmm. front of you, you're really going to have to find that in a new market. It's not possible. It's simply not possible to retrofit technologies like that would require tapping into your car's brake system, into its central computer. Essentially, the manufacturers aren't going to take on that kind of liability. But so that's the most advanced things. But there are plenty of technological upgrades that have come by in the last 10 years that you can retrofit to your car.
For instance?
Well, the rear view camera you were talking about, that's an easy one to do. Now, first of all, the reason that more cars have backup cameras is fundamentally a safety concern. The national can't exactly remember which arm of the NHTSA is requiring cars to have these.
That.
They'll all
okay.
be standard. They'll be standard equipment by 2018. And the reason is every year about 50 or so deaths occur by people being backed over by cars.
Yeah, right.
And
so
that's 50 too many. Right?
And that's an investment worth
right.
looking. Is it terribly expensive?
No, it isn't. And the unit cost for the car manufacturers to add this now, it's not so high. And that's why it was essentially made standard. Now, that's the safety reason. But for you as a convenience, mm-hmm. it has a real benefits. Essentially, a lot of people don't like to admit that they're not the best parallel parker in the world.
Right. Right.
And this makes parallel parking a lot easier when you can see what's behind you instead of parking by sound.
Right. You see it.
Park by sight.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't dent the person behind you or in front of you. But what about who puts that in? Do I do it or do I take it to a dealership and is it expensive?
Well, there are a variety of options. They're all – you don't really need to spend more than $200.
Okay.
And there are options that use wireless transmitters to get the signal from the camera, which is mounted on the back of your car, up to whatever screen you have. They're quite easy to install. I would say that if you can tackle replacing the fuse on your car, replacing a fuse is like, hey, I got this. This isn't too hard for you to tackle. But some others require running a wire through the car. You might end up going to Best Buy or a similar car stereo shop and paying about $100 to have it put in.
So when do I make that decision? And we're talking with David Mobaum, auto expert from Kipler. When do I make the decision as to whether I want to upgrade this car or I'm going to buy a better car or a later model?
Yeah, one thing I would note is that there have been studies showing that a number of these technologies that are supplied, and they show up mostly in luxury cars first, but they're coming onto the broader market. These most advanced technologies, like park-it-yourself cars from Ford and Lexus, that there's actually not a whole lot of take-up by people who buy cars with them. It may just have come standard with the package. Mm-hmm. So you have to actively decide, is this something that I'm going to use? Or do you think it's just a silly novelty?
Mm-hmm.
And the way to do that is to test drive, check out a friend's car, the normal things you would do when checking out a new car. But some of them, such as the rear view camera or a new stereo that includes navigation, you kind of know what you're getting into. So mm-hmm. that you could do by shopping on the web.
Okay, to check around and see what other prices are and I guess if the car is running fine, you've really got to decide whether it's worth the value at this point or whether it's just wait till you wear the car out and then get a new car with the devices that you think would enhance your experience.
That's right.
The other point I wanted to raise with you, too, is what I have found is that there are notifications that comes from the manufacturer when we talk about whether we take it to Jiffy Lube or we take it to the dealer. The dealer gets notifications from – in other words, there's experiences that they know, and I found that out, is that there's a problem with the gas tank, the breather. So if the tank is not right on my car – it will stop when you fill it up. It
won't let you fill it completely.
And you can't do it. And no matter at a point, some point, what it does is it just the car stops because it gets air in there and the breather lets air come in.
Mm.
Now it doesn't say that anywhere except that when I took it to the dealer and I explained my problem, they said, "Oh yeah, we know about that and we can fix that and we fix it at no charge." And that's the point I want to make. They know that the problem exists, and so what they were saying is, we're not going to call you, but if you have the problem and you come in and we see it, we've got a paper here that says this is something that the dealer will fix at no charge.
Right, and the manufacturer will cover it. Now, the independent shop can, with a little effort, learn about those too.
Oh, okay.
They won't necessarily fix it for free, but a good, active, involved mechanic can get that information too. And frankly, a lot of things you as the consumer can find out about your car simply by looking online. For every brand of car, there is an enthusiast website where people post all kinds of details. They'll post about technical service bulletins like what you experienced.
Yeah.
And you can learn about it yourself online.
Okay. Look, I want to talk more about that because that has really had an impact. The technology, both in terms of what goes into the car and what you can find out about the car, it has changed, and it has changed dramatically. My guest is David Mobaum. He is auto expert from Kiplinger. We're talking about your car, how much you're paying, and when you should get a new one, and when you should make your car smarter. All of that straight ahead. Stay with us. This is Radio America, Home and Family Finance. Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry, here on the Radio America Network. My guest is David Mobaum, auto expert from Kiplinger. We're talking about when you should make the decision to upgrade your old car, or maybe you decide you want to buy a new car because you want to pick up some of that new device out there. And I'm going to talk about two things. First of all, we're going to talk about the technology, and then I want to talk about whether it's safe to sit in the car right now and let it drive you someplace. I don't think so, but that's what's happening. We've got these cars on the road. First, the technology has changed. I can now find out more information. But as you said, there's a lot of noise out there. So how do I make the decision here? Where do I go?
Right. Well, I mean, this is just sort of a classic internet story, which is that thanks to the internet, there's tons more information about your car, among other things, that you that before you would have had to rely on word of mouth or your mechanic to do. For someone who's interested in finding out more about their car, its repair, what repairs it needs, its maintenance, its foibles, all the sort of things like that, you can just Google all day long and find out about it. What I mean by the sort of signal to noise ratio is that you're also dealing with the internet and everyone who has an opinion that may not be good.
Right.
So it requires sort of reporter skills. There's not one single source that really nails it down.
Okay, but just be careful. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there. Make sure that if you're going to take advice, you take it from somebody who knows what they're talking about.
That's right, and look at more than one source.
Okay. Now let's talk about these cars. Okay. Maybe I'm old-fashioned, but having somebody else or having the technology drive my car down the road rather than me driving it down the road just seems so antithetical to everything I've ever learned. But my children, they think, hey, Dad, in a few years, you know, there won't be any accidents because the car will be driving. And they seem perfectly at ease with it. Are you?
Right. Well, you know, I've all along been, frankly, a bit of a skeptic, but my skepticism keeps getting beaten down. I mean, when Tesla just dropped in that automatic driving technology, yeah, I was quite frankly amazed. But think of this. I was driving on the highway the other day and I engaged cruise control and I thought, hey, this is an autonomous driving feature, and it's been around for decades.
And it really
it's as
is.
Old as I am.
That's right.
To some extent, we are willing to say, okay, you take care of the gas, and that was no problem at all. Now, steering, yes, that's another thing. Frankly, a big advantage could be in the future is that seniors will be able essentially to keep driving longer because the car will handle more of it.
And I think we'll be more comfortable knowing that if they're in a car that has all of these amenities and all these safety and assists, that, yeah, I'd let my mom drive a little bit longer. I just took her car away.
Me too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You just have to. It's a tough thing to do. Yeah. Al, would you allow somebody in? What do you think of Al Peterson? He's a pretty sound guy out of New York. Well, we won't hold that against him. But what would you drive a car that was driverless? Would you?
Yeah, not in New York. Nope.
would you drive? What are we calling? Not driverless.
Autonomous. Autonomous.
Would you drive that car anywhere?
Short range, I suppose. But have they ever tested what happens when one autonomous car meets another?
Yes.
And?
They actually they interact better in some cases than autonomous cars and people. No, autonomous cars and people can get confused. Sometimes it comes down to subtleties. Like an autonomous car can handle, okay, it sees the stripe is on the left and the stripe is on the right. Okay, I got it. Oh, here's the stripe for the stop line. But think about what happens when four cars come to a four-way stop.
Yeah, who
There's
goes
this or, like body English thing about who
we do that.
Who kind of over
we
the line?
Look,
like,
look
yeah,
our
look
ways.
At the, yeah, yeah. Who's going to go? It's very hard for autonomous cars.
Yeah. And Al, finally, I'm looking for this neutral. How much are you willing to pay for the cost of autonomy?
Not yet.
Okay,
I'm still having too much fun driving my own vehicle.
Yeah, that's the other part. I think I like driving. I really do still like driving.
Oh, I do like driving too. But sometimes wouldn't you just rather go in the back and take a nap?
You have a wife.
That's why you have a wife. Oh, he's dead. He's a dead man.
I see. Were you on for
the
divorce?
Did he miss the first part of the show?
That could lead to a divorce. Yeah, okay. I mean, I think all of these things we have to consider. We have, and that's your point here, that the audience has to consider all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of making these decisions.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a pleasure, David, having you on the show. I think we're going to be confronted with much of what we talked about here with the autonomous part of this because that's where we're headed. The technology is there. It's getting better. It's only getting much better, right?
It's coming, and the government has indicated it's not really going to stand in the way, so it's coming.
Fascinating stuff. It's a fascinating time to live, folks. Stay alert. Stay involved. You heard David talk about what's available to you. Yeah, there are some changes you can make to your car, and there are some changes that you shouldn't make. And, of course, we all like to get a new car at some point, even at these prices, which are scary. This is Home and Family Finance. I'm your host, Paul Berry. David, thanks for being with us. Come back again, would you, please?
My pleasure.
And would you come back? I'd love to see you right here again next week, same time, same place. Al, thank you very much. David, thank you. And we'll see you next week right here on the Radio America Network.